Welcome to
Men's Book Club.
Men's, and Men's Book Club. That was a play on the book title that we're doing today because it's a lot of ands in it.
It's a lot.
It's an and one.
It's a weird title.
Yeah, Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow by Gabrielle Zevin. I don't like the cover. Before we get into the book, I just want to say I don't like the cover.
It's trippy.
It's too much. It's too much. It's too much for me.
It's a trippy.
But I don't really look at the title. I take the cover off of hardcovers and I kind of put them away because I don't want to, bump into them every time and have them fall off and rip them and whatever. So I don't really ever look at the cover. I don't really like hardcover anyway, but we're here. We're here, baby. We're here to talk about Gabrielle. Our girl Gabrielle.
Our girl Gabrielle.
Yeah. So let's do a really quick synopsis of this book. The book is about two childhood friends who are basically get together under some weird circumstances, but both enjoy playing video games, and they basically grow up, create a video game company. And the book is about that tumultuous relationship of them going from being very close friends, one having a crush on the other, how they're dealing with new games, kind of arguing about how the games should go, sort of just like the back and forth of both being colleagues and being friends. Thrown into the mix are just random events like his roommate eventually dating her, even though he's in love with her. This is Sam and Sadie. They're the main two characters. Marx is this third character who's a roommate who ends up becoming Sadie's love interest.
And the producer of their company.
They're very successful. They make a lot of money and they move their operations.
No matter what I thought about the book, it kind of inspired me to, that would be kind of cool.
Yeah.
To start a company. They make it seem so easy.
Yeah. It's very cool. Well, if it wasn't for Marx and his credit card, which they kind of like skip over, he's the reason that they were able to not have jobs, not go to school, but also create this massive video game. And they buy an office in Venice Beach, I think, in California. So it's like, there is a big unrealistic aspect of that, of the business starting. But anyway, they create this very famous video game called Ichigo. And that's basically, it propels them to fame, it propels them to money. And again, the whole entirety of the book is this relationship between them. There's a lot of fallouts and arguments and things like that. Marx dies from a lone gunman deal. It was accidental, and he gets shot in the offices, and that kind of creates more of the tumultuousness in the relationship. And that's it. That's really the book. The story sort of ends kind of where the middle is, which is they're kind of have this weird relationship where they're on again, off again friends. It really reminds me a lot of like a Rachel Ross kind of relationship, minus the dating.
Yeah, minus any sort of dating.
Yeah, like they're not together, but they kind of both have feelings, but they don't do anything about it.
I like the choice that they didn't get together because I thought, halfway through the book, I'm like, where is this going? Mm. Because obviously he likes her, and I was not going to say I predicted Marx is going to die, but there had to be an event that they got.
Which doesn't really happen till towards the end.
Yeah, which some kind of closure. So I wasn't like that surprised that he died, but I kind of liked how they didn't get together after that. So that I actually liked that part because they could have easily been like, "Whoa, I love you the whole time."
Let's get them together, right?
So it was kind of like even though they loved each other in a weird kind of way, it didn't happen. So I kind of like that.
Yeah, I agree. There really isn't much in terms of events happening in this story. It really is just the synopsis that we gave. They have a very weird, tumultuous relationship. And I keep using the word tumultuous because that's really the only way to describe it. They're up and down. They're
not the most likable
characters. No. And I want to get to the characters in a second. Yeah. But I want to give a little bit of kudos first before we start tearing apart these characters about the plot of the book, which... I'll start off by saying one of the things I really liked about it is that it was a very different genre. It wasn't a love story, even though it's pitched that way in the synopsis of the book cover. Right. It's pitched as a love story.
It is in a friendship way, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe.
Maybe. But
I mean, that's the only way you could say love story.
The way that the book kicks off when he sees her on the subway, you're kind of seeing like this like rom-com sort of way, but it doesn't really develop into anything. That's really the only time that he mentions, you know, thinking anything of her in a romantic way. And obviously you can tell, but I really did like the fact that it was like a video game company that's very new. You don't really don't see that in books. There really was, the story kind of moved rapidly, kept moving. She could have just as easily spent 100 pages on those first couple of years when they're creating Ichigo in the apartment in Massachusetts.
I thought it was it was cool as a video game company. I think that's part of the appeal. I'm not a big gamer, but
yeah,
it is kind of, I also had a look if these games actually existed. I know. But
yeah, same.
Because I was like, okay, maybe she's taking.
I think some were, okay. And some were fictional. Like Dead Sea Scrolls wasn't obviously real, which is made by. Oh, that's another character we should mention and give a little bit of a shout out to Dove.
I think it's Dove.
Dove?
Because, and the only reason I say that is because I listen to sometimes sports talk. And there's like a producer, Dove Kramer, and he's Jewish. So
and he spells it the same way? Okay, I'll take Dove.
I don't know if he spells it the same way, but I'm imagining it's Dove.
I'll take it. I think Dove would have an E. Yeah. But yeah, so Dove, who is initially Sadie's professor at MIT, ends up becoming an investor in their video game company.
What a weird character, too.
And eventually ends up being Sadie's boyfriend, who, by the way, was it like...
almost seems abusive in a way, but yeah, not... Yeah. But not.
Yeah, I think he's very eccentric. He kind of like used her for almost like sex, really. He had a wife and a son who lived in Israel. And yeah, it was a very weird dynamic.
Like she's not like blameless because she knew he was married. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
I think she did take advantage of her because he is a professor. Right. But at the same time, she could have walked away at a lot of points because he wasn't like holding her hostage.
Yeah, yeah, and I want to get to Sadie because I think there's a lot to talk about.
She's
Sadie.
The best. She's
but
the best.
I the first thing I want to ask is when you read this book, did you feel like it was an adult book or like a young adult's book?
Oh yeah, that's a good question. It felt like more young adult,
right? Right, but it's not.
And
There are parts in this that I'm reading and I'm like, this has to be a young adult book. And then there are other parts of it and I'm like, this is not young adult. Like, it gets very dirty at times. Like, you know, especially like her scenes with the guy. Like, there are parts when they start talking too much about like...
What were the young adult books we were... was it Midnight Library? No, that's not young adult.
Looking for Alaska.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I knew that one.
Yeah.
But that was like one of the only ones.
Yeah. I'm sure we've done others.
Although Looking for Alaska, I guess, had some...
It wasn't to this extreme. No, it wasn't. Yeah, I had to look this up because I kept looking back on it over and over again. I'm like, somebody somewhere had to have designated this book as a young adult's book. Because it's by no means is this book for adults. Let's just like throw that. It's written in the consciousness of like you can tell from the voice, from the narration, that it's written in the voice of somebody who is immature, kind of like young.
Which kind of makes sense in the beginning because they're, teenagers, adults, young adults, I guess, because they had to be in their early
20s. The bulk of the book is college and after.
Yeah.
You know, they're 30s and 20s, and they're still having these really weird... The language use is very weird. And I looked it up. I looked up what makes up a young adult's novel. And it's the...
Violence?
It's the... yeah, you wish. it's the exploration of new things in the life, like first starting to work,
technically,
have sex. Right. Talking about like, you know, having problems with things like family home or like sexuality, all that stuff. this kind makes of fits that. The book. Kind of the second the thing is, it's sort of written in the age gap of where it is a young adult.
Well, she's a young writer, right? I looked at the back. Mm-hmm. She looks young. I don't know if this is her first book.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
And she, yes, you're right. She's kind of like late 20s, mid to late
20s. I mean, I don't know when, the book is not that old.
Last year, 2020.
Yeah. So she looks like she's like 30.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I also, so those two things really make up for it, like where it's set. And then also they keep saying, you can hear it in the narration of the writer. You can tell Harry Potter is not written the same way that Lonesome Dove is, same way that, like, you know, take your pick out a book. Like, even Stephen King, even if the story is very primitive or very, like, maybe there isn't many events happening, or even if it is set in high school, you can tell it's written for adults. And there's a massive... Andy Weir, when we did the Project Hail Mary, you can tell that's for adults. There's a language that sort of makes up what makes it an adult. And this wasn't it. This is obviously written for, like... younger people.
I mean, and you know what? It makes sense because I didn't hear about this book. My brother and my sister read it. My sister likes to read a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, she just gave it to me to read. And it's good because if we're doing this book club, it's good to read different things.
Yeah.
It kind of makes sense though because I doubt like my mom at 60 is picking up this book. You know, it is slanted. Yeah. Because it's video games.
Yeah. It's very immature content also. Like it. You know, when she's like, oh, Sam, I love you. And he's like, terribly. It's like, come on. Like, who outside of like a high school kid would find that appealing? Like,
it kind of reminds me of being that age where you're, oh, I'm not going to tell that girl. Yeah, exactly. Because we've all had that.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I'm talking about when I'm talking about language. Yeah. It's sort of like... This is the way their thought process, like how their relationship is how my relationships were at the age of high school.
Well, they are very immature characters.
Very, very immature. So now let's get to Sadie, who I'm going to...
Do you remember her last name?
No.
I believe it goes with the character you referred to her as, what she's like. Rachel Green, Sadie Green.
Oh, so wow. Maybe, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Damn. That completely stuffed my mind. So Sadie is selfish, resentful, and insecure.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
And those are her own words about herself. Page 394. I just want to let everybody know that she also.
He was looking the whole book for it.
I could not dislike a human. I don't want to say human being because she's not a human being. She's fictional, but a character more than I have disliked this girl. She sucks on so many levels. I don't know if the author intentionally tried to write one of the worst lead characters ever, but I think the combination of Sadie not having a good personality and also that YA, like young adult immatureness combination drove me crazy.
She was a... I hated her character. I because she was just so annoying.
Yes.
And a lot of it was like, didn't even make sense.
Yes.
I remember mainly she wanted credit for a video game, which she made, which she definitely maybe arguably made more than Sam.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, she didn't want to promote it, let's say. Right. And she's mad that he got credit.
Yeah. And not only that, but she would find anything to dislike him or get angry at Sam about when he really didn't do... Like, the whole thing is his idea. And what really drives me nuts about any character in the world is this idea, which is also like Rachel Green, where you have not... I'll put it in air quotes because there's always a degree to it, but you have not suffered like those around you. And yet you want to be treated like you have gone through some shit. And not only do we know people that do that, but
we do.
But we also, you see it a lot. And again, Rachel Green is the perfect, she comes from money, so does Sadie. she basically decides to leave that life behind to go to a new city. So does Sadie. She doesn't really have any struggles to make except that she's starting from scratch, by the way, on the credit card of somebody else.
The only difference I really see is that, well, Rachel didn't really work that hard at, well, I guess she did.
Mm-hmm.
This girl worked tirelessly.
No, no, no. 100%. I'm not talking about the work part. Mm. I'm talking about the fact that every time Sam had a problem, like after surgery, she would get upset about the fact that, like, oh, Sam, you think you're the only one with problems? And it's like,
I mean, he did have a pretty big problem.
His mother died when he was young. His father walked out on them, and he doesn't have a relationship. And he broke his foot and has to get operated on.
Yeah, it's not even like a broken foot that, like, oh, it healed. It's a constant reminder.
And he had to get it amputated.
Yeah, it's a constant reminder, like, oh, my mom died. I was in this horrible car accident. And I know that road, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's a famous, was that Mulholland Drive?
Oh, wow. I didn't even...
There's a movie based on it. It's a very... there is no guardrail. It's a very steep hill. It's nice to see scenery. And you see the locals. You know, they fly up there because they know it. Because
they know it.
But right. I'm like...
Ah. Oh, I didn't even remember the name of the road. That's how much like that.
The only reason I know is because it's very, very famous.
Yeah, yeah. So, back to Sadie and her beauty... she has this thing where she has a chip on her shoulder the entirety of the book because she's a woman in an industry. She succeeds in that industry.
Pretty early, too.
Very quickly.
Very quickly.
And still, as she's successful, goes back and talks about how difficult her life is being a leader in that industry. Gets upset when Sam goes for these talks, but she doesn't want to do it. And then when he tells her to do it, she doesn't do a good job, and she blames him for putting her in that situation.
You know what I hate to say? It almost seemed like she was written as a caricature of how a man views a woman. Mm. It's weird because she's a woman writer. Because like if you watch like other things, she almost seems like a caricature. Like she's, you know... mad that she's not getting the credit or so it's kind of weird because it's a woman writer. You'd think that maybe she would have
well I'm gonna
been portrayed differently.
I agree, and maybe that's why. Maybe the woman writer has a chip on her shoulder, so she's kind of looking for any excuse.
Well, that's fine, but you could have made a different character.
A likable female character would really be helpful. I mean, I didn't like Sam by any means. He sucks, but he was comparison. I didn't like Marx either. I didn't like any of them. But what I really do appreciate is the fact that in comparison to the rest of the characters, Sadie was a gem. I mean, Sam was a gem. Like, he, especially to Sadie, like... You see their relationship, and she would do something. Like, when they're having an argument, they would fight and argue, and she shuts down and then gets upset at him for something he didn't do and refuses to communicate. I want to backtrack to something that happened in the beginning of the book that I think everybody needs to just take a quick second. They met when they were 11.
Mm.
They didn't talk until they were in college.
Yeah, because of a fight.
How,
or whatever.
How do they, when they're in college, get so close or talk like they're so close? She says it over and over. They spent, 695 hours, which I think amounts to a year.
Mm.
You spent a year together. And so from 11 to 12 or 10 to 11 or whatever it is. And not every hour, obviously, like four times a week. And you meet each other way later in the future because they get mad at each other when they're 12, already a toxic relationship. And then they meet again when they're in college, when they're sophomores in college or something. And nothing, there's no community. Who have you spoken to at the age of 12? Who, if you run into the street at the age of 22, you would just pick up.
No, you probably wouldn't, but it's one of those things. The only thing I could see kind of happen realistically is that, okay, your friend's at 12, you're a good friend, whatever. Something happened, you know, she did something wrong with the charity.
Yeah.
and then you fight, and then you might see them later and be like, oh, you know, we should hang out again, and then it never happens.
Right. But instead, that's
probably more realistic.
But right, exactly. Like, you can do that, but instead, what you do is, there are friends that I was friends with for 15 years that once I don't talk to for 2 years, I don't have
that relationship with. You know why it didn't really work too well in this book? Because there was no really struggle with it. Now, let's go say you met them again,
mm-hmm.
and they immediately didn't want to work together, mm-hmm. and then you build up to it. Like, right. something happened. Maybe she's working at another company.
100%.
Then maybe it's earned.
Yes.
Like, oh, okay, you're not who I thought you were. Like, you're doing, it's kind of weird. It just automatically mm-hmm. was like, well, you're good at games, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. here's my game to play.
And yeah, not only here's my game to play, but goes to her apartment, and even though she doesn't want him there, stays and hangs out every single day. That's not real. I hate that, because it's something that could have just as easily been fixed. They could have had another form of communication throughout high school. They could have met in a coffee shop and talked it out first.
Yeah, it could
but
have
they
been
just
like...
go from we're friends for 1 year when we're kids to we're no longer friends for 6 years.
No, I get there's like a bond with video games. It would have been cooler if maybe she was working with Dove
mm-hmm.
and she was not treated well. And then another opportunity.
Yeah.
We should do our own thing.
Right.
Later on.
Right.
Then you at least earn it back. Yeah. It's just not automatic.
That's a great way to put it. It wasn't earned. Yeah. That relationship was not earned. It's very weird. I can't think of anybody who, when I was 11 years old and hanging out with, that I would have met 6 years later and I would have just talked to, like, we just picked something up.
Yeah. Like, for instance, I'm getting old. My 20-year high school reunion is this year. I'm not going.
Mm-hmm.
But if I went to that and I only communicate with like two people mm-hmm. from my grade, you know, you would go there and be like, oh.
Right.
And then what?
Exactly.
If you haven't spoken to them in 20 years, you're probably.
Exactly.
It's probably not happening.
And that's people you spent 4 years with.
Or maybe more, you know, elementary school.
Right.
Beyond.
This is a one-time thing. It was... It's so weird.
The only thing I kind of liked about it, like, at least there was a connection. It was video games. They could have just done it where there was a struggle.
But she didn't.
No, she didn't.
She didn't.
That leads me to believe it's young adults, because if it was adults, it's probably a little bit different.
Oh man, 100%, 100%. There is one more qualm that I have with this, okay. and I do want to bring it up, not because. It's going to get contentious, but this is the stuff that a lot of people, when you go on Goodreads, if you go to like the negative reviews only, mm-hmm. Which I read both, I read the positive stuff, and I think we've already talked about it, which is the story was going very quickly. But there are two things that stuck out with everybody that was giving this book a negative review that I agree with.
Okay.
The first is from page 300, this isn't specified in the reviews, but... They all kind of start at the same point. Once Marx dies, from that point till the end of the book, nothing happens.
Now, I have a question about that. This is what I didn't get. It was like very shocking he dies.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't understand. Okay, so now he's dead.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't understand why she still didn't speak with him.
Yeah.
And only because Marx, when he was like dying or whatever, or... maybe it was a little bit before that. It's like, you know, Sam didn't even know that the note thing. Mm-hmm. She was holding a... It didn't make any sense.
Which is, again, brings us back to young adult.
Yeah, I didn't really understand what her grudge was still. Yes. And then they had a, like... The cool part was creating avatars, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Mapletown. I think she wanted that. I guess she wanted to work that in there.
Yeah.
I just didn't get the reluctant... Oh, I'm not coming back to work.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. But my favorite part of the entire book, if you want me to sum up Sadie and her, how much of a C word she is, she comes into the office, a brand new opening. Sam invites her. She shows up, throws up on the sidewalk, and leaves.
I mean, that's what you have to do.
Leaves. Doesn't clean
Irish
up.
Irish goodbye.
Doesn't clean up her vomit off of the front doors that she... What a fucking... psychopath.
I almost like believe that she's gonna become the new Dove, because like she's like
she does that with
she's like a teacher now.
Yeah, I could see that happening. But anyway, from the moment that Marx dies till the end of the book, the only two events that happen is 30 pages of that Pioneer game.
Yeah. Which I had no idea what I was reading. What the
fuck was that? Yeah, me neither.
I'm not going to lie. I skimmed a lot of it because I was like, what?
Yeah, that was weird. It wasn't well written. It wasn't entertaining. It was too long. And it wasn't until the end that it kind of like, okay, fine. Like, you could have made that 2 pages. And then after that, nothing happens at all.
No.
His grandfather dies. They go to the funeral. They kind of have this small reconciliation, but they still go to their separate ways. There is nothing happening.
What I didn't understand either. They're a successful video game company. And I understand that, like, your partner dies.
Mm-hmm.
But his partner died too.
Right.
Right. Obviously, he kept telling her that. But it's like, he kept telling her. Why would you give that up?
He kept telling her that.
First of all, you'll make probably better games because you're probably like, you'll probably have a creative. It didn't make much sense to me. Like, oh, we're just going to give up a successful video game company.
Right. Which, let's be fair. Let's be fair. She didn't create anything that anybody liked. Marx brought in those two people that created that whole slew of, I forget what it's called, like high school. It was like a high school game. And then Sam created really Ichigo. I mean, yes, she was definitely involved in the design. I'm not taking away that part of it. But her herself can't do anything while Sam himself can, because he at least has the ability to work with other people.
He does.
Now, I want to get to this part, which is going to be contentious.
Well, I'll have a question for you, too.
Yeah.
Sam, like, when he's jealous, I guess, he's like, Marx is a non-playable character.
Yeah.
Did you think that? Because I didn't.
No. Actually, Sam is a non-playable character.
Because I think Marx actually led to things happening.
Mm-hmm.
He brought in two people. He's a producer. He made decisions that they didn't make, because he was the one that was like, well, we should do this.
Yeah.
So I don't know
so much so that when he dies, the book ends.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
So I don't know. I mean, it just seems like, you know why I think he said that? Not only jealousy, but also, if you're a creative type, you're not going to look at a producer and be like, that guy is worth it.
Yeah.
Because you're going to be like, well, I created this game.
Right.
But you don't see the details of, like,
you're just thinking creatively.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you. 100%. Marx carried. Let's just say that. Now, I'm going to say the last thing that I have a list of things I disliked about this book. But I want to get to the next thing, which is a big complaint for a lot of people and a big complaint for me. There were so many hard-hitting cultural issues that were in there. There was gay marriage. Mm. There was gun control. There was now I'm blanking out. Oh, abortion was in there. There was minorities not being represented. There was Asian
even
hate.
Female representation, because feminism changed,
Ichigo
to a boy, maybe.
Yeah,
a girl.
Yeah, there was so marriage in San Francisco. Look,
I actually like the marriage one because it led to something, at least.
It didn't.
No, it led to like I getting like shot.
Yeah, but sure, yes. Not the marriage part. The fact that they included it in the game.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, I thought you were talking about the San Francisco wedding.
No.
Which I want to just very quickly split this out.
Well, when was this book in the 90s, right?
Yeah, 97 is when they first started. But so, this happened in like the mid-2000s, technically, because they launched that game after 9/11. So like 2002, 2003. But that's not the point. We're not going to debate the abortion versus non-abortion or gun control versus non-control. But what it is
that's another podcast.
When you're inserting so many like buzz cultural phrases. Okay, I get it. It's a young adult's book, even if it's not supposed. It is a young adult's book. And to be honest with you, this is written for Gen Z for the most part. Mm. And to them, that stuff, they kind of eat it up. It is what it is. Like, they don't, that's sort of what their MO is. That's kind of the part of the identity, whatever. But it's not coherent to the story, because one, when those two employees go to get married in San Francisco, right before that chapter and right after that chapter, Sadie and Sam are not friends. In that chapter, Sadie and Sam walk to a bodega and go buy umbrellas holding hands,
oh, yeah.
arm in arm. Right before that, they weren't speaking. Right after that, they didn't speak. In that chapter, she tries to create this like rainbow effect of, oh, because we're in San Francisco and we're lined up and we're at the city hall, it's got to be magical. So I'm going to bring these two together. No cohesiveness in that. That's one. I mean, I don't want to get into all of them, but the point is that there was a lot of like, oh, there was like randomly throwing in the fact that Sadie got an abortion and tried to make that like part of her personality, but never was mentioned again, ever. There was Sam had a male sexual partner and like oh, yeah. no reason for that at all, but just to bring up another thing, which again, I get it. Like I said, I think this book is written for young adults, Gen Z, so that's the kind of stuff that they eat up. But it's just so, when you're reading this as somebody who reads a lot, that's the kind of stuff where you're reading and you're like, well, that's just not necessary. It's just, it would be like if there was in the middle of like the Harry Potter books, there was like a conversation about should the muggles carry guns or not. Like, it's just, is this really, you know, do we need to do this here? Do we not have enough with like the video game and the relationship? And fine, like an overzealous person comes in and accidentally shoots Marks. That's not a debate for gun control.
Yeah, the one thing, this is how you know every character is like really shitty. Marks knows that Sam really likes Sadie
mm-hmm.
in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't stop him.
Doesn't stop him.
Doesn't stop her.
Doesn't stop
him. Doesn't stop her. And then they refuse to even tell.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, my favorite part about that relationship is that it's she's this person who doesn't want a family, doesn't want anything to do with anybody. But the moment that Marks dies, all of a sudden she's like torn up about this love of her life. You knew Sam for, at that point, whatever, 10 years. You knew Marks for the same amount of time, if not less. You only liked him because of one trip. You carrying his kid and you completely crumble.
Yeah.
Taking the argument of women can do anything completely out of the equation now. Now, this is exactly why people would argue women can't do everything because of the way that you're behaving, which goes back to your original point. If this is written by a woman, she just wrote one of the worst women character ever.
Yeah, I agree.
Very weird. Very strange to me. Like I said, there's a lot of like, you know, cultural references to a lot of things that I don't really necessarily think need to be there. You're just including them to sort of like cater to all the groups. You want to be cool with like, you know, Gen Z, really. That's all it is. This book is perfect for anybody between the ages of, I can't even say that because there was like scenes in there about how her and Dove pee on each other while having sex. I mean, I can't say this is for kids. this is that blows me away. Yeah. The story's compelling. It's a new story. It's a very interesting take. It's to the right. One of John Green, by the way, we mm-hmm. mentioned him, wrote a review for this book.
Did he? Wow.
Talking about how it was a great book.
Mm.
And I'm like, John Green would know what's up, but that also led me to believe that it's a YA because he's not, you know, that's who else would care what John Green says unless you're reading
exactly.
a YA book, which is fine. It's fine that it's a YA, but if this is what you're, a YA in my mind is something that you would give to high school kids or entry to English class kids in college. And I don't know if you need to be talking with a 16-year-old about how you pee on each other, handcuff each other.
A little bit older, maybe.
Do you need to do it with a 20-year-old? Do you need to do it with a 30-year-old? Come on. Anyway, that was quite a ride. That was quite a ride. So, what do you rate this book? What do you rate this out of five?
I don't know, like a two, something like that.
Yeah, I went back and forth. I went back and forth a lot. I'm between like 1.5 and 2, and I want to give it a 2 because it was a quick read. It was good, but I want to give it a 1.5 because I can't. I would never recommend this to anybody. Like, I can't give this to anybody my age because I'll seem like a creep, you know? Like, I can't,
please read it.
I can't give this to anybody older than me because that's weird. And I can't give it to anybody younger than me because then I'm a pedo. Like, that's the way I'm looking at this book. I think I'm going to do 1.5. I think that's where I'm going to end up. I you know, maybe a 2 in a few years if I look back on this book fondly, but right now I'm at a 1.5.
Yeah, you're going to reread it every year.
Yeah, no. There were some really good parts. Again, the idea of having a company of video games is such a new story that you need to give it a little bit of that respect. But every other part, the writing, the characters, the fact that there was nothing happening for a big part of the book, there were references to things that were completely irrelevant. All of that together for me just kind of made it feel like, okay, this is my first book. I want to make this group happy, this group happy, this group happy, this group happy. And at the same time, glue the book together and here you go. And then it just ends up being this fragmented book that has like a million different pieces to it that for me, for somebody who reads a lot, and I'm not saying that people who read a lot should not like this book, but for people who read a lot, you'll notice very quickly, oh, this isn't a regular book. This is sort of like a gimmicky book.
Yeah, I did like that it was an easy read.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Besides the Pioneer section.
Yeah, besides that. But most of it was like pretty... I mean, it's like, what, 350 pages, but it doesn't really...
397.
Like, oh, it didn't even feel like it, really.
Yeah, no, it didn't. Except the Pioneer page. I agree with you. I think it was... You know what? You've convinced me. It's a 2.
Okay.
You've convinced me. It's a 2. I'll give it a 2.
I just don't like giving halves.
Yeah. No, I never... There are 1.5s out there. This is a 2. This is a 2. I'll give this a 2. This is a good 2.
I mean, I'll give... You know, she put in some creative thought. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Not my favorite...
Yeah, I get you. Okay, Gabrielle Zavine's Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow. Thank you guys for listening to this. Follow us at Men's Book Club Pod on Instagram.
Yeah.
If you have any book recommendations for us, send them our way at mensbookclub2020@gmail.com or send us an Instagram DM. Let us know what you like. What you don't like.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for listening and see you next time.